Welcome to the ASRML tutorial session 2.4, where we're going to use the Harvey data to introduce bivariate analysis, analysing two traits simultaneously. And in doing this, we're going to introduce a whole new dimension to ASRML, that is the specification of variant structures other than the identity structure that we have looked at so far. For a bivariate data, we could look at the Harvey data and maybe analyse the two variates, average daily gain and weight, together. Now, if we do that, we want to have two sets of sire effects. We'll have two sets of residuals. We'll have variances for each set. And, of course, we'll have covariances between the residuals and covariances between the sire effects. Now, in thinking about variance structures, we need to just step back a bit and say, typically, when we think of a column of numbers, we'd say, well, the variance of those numbers is such and such. And realise that in saying that, we're actually implicitly saying that there is an identity variance-covariance matrix scaled by that variance. In other words, the covariance between any two effects is zero, and the variance is a constant for each of those effects. But now if we think about, say, two sets of sire effects, the sire effects for the first trait will have one variance. The sire effects for the second trait will have a different variance. And maybe you should write this down in a structure to appreciate what we're saying here. Now, within each of those set, we have an identity matrix. In other words, for a particular pair of sires, the covariance of a particular trait is zero. But for a particular sire, the covariance between the traits is not zero. And so we have a covariance structure between the two traits. And so for our 18 effects, if we've got 9 sires and 2 traits, these can be written as a 9x2 table in which the rows are independent and the columns have a 2x2 variance-covariance matrix, and we can form the variance-covariance matrix of the vector of 18 effects obtained by doing the VEC operation, or stacking the second set of effects underneath the first set of effects by using a direct product structure. So we have an identity matrix of order 9 because the sires are assumed independent in our little example now, and we have a 2x2 variance matrix relating to the columns of our two-way table. We form the direct product of those two things. And if we stacked the second trait under the first trait, then it would be a direct product of the column matrix, a 2x2 matrix, by the row matrix, the I9, to give us an 18x18 variance-covariance matrix for our sire effects. Now that's what we've described in these slides here. It's important to realise that in doing this, we've made an assumption about the order of the effects. We've assumed that the second is nested within the first, that is, sires are nested within traits. And this is the order that comes about if we set up the effect as trait.sire in ASRML. So let's add the bivariate analysis as part 3 of our Harvey job. ADJ and weight, we list the two variates that we're analysing before the modelled as symbol. And now instead of having mu, we have the word trait, which is equivalent, but it gives a mean for each of the traits. So whereas mu is just a single number, trait is the analogous number when we have a multiple trait, and it supplies a constant term for each of the traits. And once we've used that word trait, which is a reserved word, then typically we will interact it with each of the other terms we might want in the model. So if we're going to fit line effects for both traits, then we do that as a fixed effect with trait.line. If we want to fit age as a covariate for the second variable, weight, but not for the first variable, then we'd use a model term constructed as at trait2.age. And we can specify lots of terms, different model terms for different traits, using that kind of structure. And then we have the random effects, and this time, rather than having simply sire, we have trait.sire, so we're setting up sire solutions for each trait. But notice that in that formulation, the sire effects have a common variance and are independent, common variance across traits. And that is not what we want. So we have to expand our job to specify what's going on. And we also, of course, need to specify what's going on at the residual level, because we've got now got two sets of residuals, ADJ residuals and weight residuals. And these are going to, in fact, not appear as a matrix, but as a vector. The ADJ value for record 1, then a weight value for record 1, ADJ value for record 2, and a weight value for record 2. So we introduce a new line, which we call the variance header line. And in this example, it says 1, 2, 1. Now, let's explore what this means. The first 1, 2 is saying that we have one set of data, but we're going to arrange it in two dimensions. Now, in some situations, you might have several independent sets of data. For example, you might have data from 10 trials, and you want to treat the trials as independent trials at the error level, although they might have common treatments, and so you might want to have trial.treatment interactions at the treatment level. But at an error level, the effects are independent, but they might have a common style of covariant structure, but it needs to be specified separately for each site. In this case, we've just got one set of data in two dimensions. The two dimensions are records, the 65 records, and two traits. And then the third number on that line is telling ASReml to also expect a definition, a variance structure, be specified for one of the model terms. So this header line tells ASReml that it has to read a two-dimensional variance structure for one set of data and one variance structure for one model term. And that's what follows. So first of all, we have the one two-directional variance structure for the residuals. Now, moving then, we look at the variance structure for the residuals. And that consists of three lines in this job, and using some defaults represented by the zeros here. So the first zero is defining a variance structure for the record dimension. There are 65 records, so technically we should have a 65 here, but in general we may not be sure exactly how many records that we have, and it's easier to let ASReml count them and let us check the number it gets rather than to require you to specify the number, because it would be easy to be out by one or two. Now, because we want to put an identity structure on the records, then we just need to have that single zero. We can define something more complicated, and that would make the line more complicated, but that is, in this context of an R structure, it is typical to have independent records, so zero is sufficient. The next two lines define the other dimension, the trait dimension. And so we have the word trait, which is translated into a two because there are two traits. Zero is a placeholder, and it is typically zero. We'll discuss later some situations where we would have something different there, and that relates to sorting of the records. If the records are not sorted, then we need to specify something there that will enable us to sort them. But in this case, the observations are sorted because ASRML processes the data systematically. It takes record by record, and within each record, trait by trait. So we have records specified first, then traits. And US is a keyword or a reserve word which stands for an unstructured variance covariance matrix. In other words, this is a matrix of order 2 because there's two levels of trait, and it has two variances and a covariance. So that gives us three numbers. Now, ASRML would like you to specify starting values for these numbers, and we could look at our existing outputs from part 1 and put in some three numbers. Well, we would know the residual variance for the first and the residual variance for the second. We don't know what the covariance is, but we can allow ASRML to calculate some values, and the values it calculates will generally be adequate. And this is done by supplying three zeros. So we could, instead of writing the variance for ADJ, the covariance between the two traits, and then the variance of weight, initial values of those, we could write 0 space 0 space 0, and as shorthand we can say 3 lots of 0, 3 star 0. So that defines a variance covariance structure for the residuals. There are 130 residuals. They come in 65 lots of 2, the 65 relating to the records in the data file, and the 2 relating to the two traits. So that's satisfied the 1-2 part of the variance header line. Now we need to define a variance structure for one of the model terms. And the model term that we are looking at is trait.sire. So we specify, first of all, the model term that we are describing, trait.sire. And we want to define a two-dimensional variance structure, a direct product involving two terms, to define the variance structure for this term. So that's what the two means on that first of those four lines. Now, in this case, we will fit an unstructured variance covariance matrix. So the syntax here is basically the same as what we did for the residual level, but note that we're specifying the trait variance, unstructured variance matrix, before the psi variance covariance matrix. And that is because this was the order in which the terms were defined. Psi is nested within trait when we say trait.psi. And so we specify the trait variance structure, and we'll fit an unstructured variance matrix. So we've got trait, and trait is abbreviated here to the first two letters, given that once the full word trait is used, it is defined and it can be abbreviated. The zero is a placeholder because the effects are in order. They were defined by the model term in a standard order. And US is the unstructured keyword. And then we ask ASRML to give us some starting values, again by saying 3 star 0, or 0 space 0 space 0. The second dimension of this direct product is the psi dimension, and this needs an identity matrix as its variance structure. So we have the line psi, which translates to 9 levels, because psi is defined as a factor with 9 levels. 0, saying we don't need to worry about sorting because the effects are sorted in standard order. And then ID, standing for an identity. We've used US as an unstructured variance matrix, ID as an identity. There are a reasonably large number of possible variant structures, and we'll explore some of those a little bit later. So what we've done then is specify a different variant structure than just simply equal variance and independence, both at the residual level and at the sire level. Just to summarise and recap that, the R structure, that's the residual structure, is 65 by 2, that is 65 lots of 2, because the data is ordered traits within records. As ASRML processes the data, it will take the records record by record, and then within each record it will extract the traits. And so that is the order that the R structure must be defined. The G structure is a 2 by 9 structure because trait.sire means that the effects of sire are ordered, sires are ordered or nested within traits. Initial values must be supplied, but in many cases, and in this case in particular, they can be supplied simply as three zeros. And notice that when using the three star zero syntax, we put that on a separate line. The initial values can follow the keyword for the model, the US in this case, if they are not zero. But if they are zero, then they need to be placed on the next line for ASRML to count them correctly. So we're asking ASRML to supply some initial values. It will actually work out from the data what is the phenotypic variance, take a fraction of that and say that that's the residual, and take another fraction of that and call that the initial sire variance covariance matrix. So the correlation structure is probably right, but the scaling is probably not too good, but it's good enough for ASRML to get going. Now, this is what we call in ASRML a multivariate analysis, a particular case being bivariate. And ASRML handles the missing values in the traits in a special way in this form of analysis. In particular, if there are missing traits, when ASRML forms the matrix, it automatically recognises the various patterns of missing values in the responses and takes appropriate action, forming an inverse with, or generalised inverse with a zero weight associated with those missing values, so that we can have different patterns of missing values in the two traits, and ASRML will sort all that out. Okay, well, we'll run the job and we get an iteration sequence which looks something like what we've got here. Now notice that this time S2 equals 1.000 appears. What we're doing now is an analysis on the variance scale, whereas before our univariate analyses were on a variance ratio scale. So here S squared is 1, and then we're going to estimate separately the variance parameters in the job. Now, we've stated that here by saying that we're fitting the variance model V equals sigma squared open R plus ZGZ dash close, but with sigma squared equal to 1. In other words, V equals R plus ZGZ dash. So we're estimating the parameters of R, the variances and covariances, and the parameters of G, the variances and covariance for size. When we've done this analysis, we have a summary of the components. They come in two groups. Notice we have six effects here. The model term is unstructured. We separate the residual and the trait.sire terms. The gamma columns and the component columns are the same because the analysis has actually been done on the component scale, which is reported in the gamma column as well as in the component column. We have the column C on SE, the component on its standard error, which gives us an indication of the relative size of the variance components. The percent change It's converged, so the percent change is zero. And the last column, the U, indicates that these parameters were not constrained. They didn't need to be constrained. We came up with some quite satisfactory answers in that analysis. Now, in that form, we just have the list of the six parameters. But ASRM will display them in another form as well, just to make it a little bit easier to sort out which terms are variances and which terms are covariances. And so the first three numbers are then rearranged or presented as a 2x2 matrix. And we see the diagonal, 132.4 is the variance of the first trait, 659 is the residual variance for the second trait, and minus 98.03 is the covariance between the traits at the residual level. And if we calculated a correlation based on those three numbers, then the correlation is minus 0.33, and that's represented in the upper triangle. Similarly, we have a matrix for the sire components, the variances on the diagonal, 27 and 98, the covariance below the diagonal, minus 12, and the genetic correlation at the sire level, minus 0.23 in the upper triangle. ASRM also produces an analysis of variance table. Here we've got numerator degrees of freedom for trait, 2 degrees of freedom for that, 4 degrees of freedom for trait dot line, 1 degree of freedom for at trait 2 dot age, denominator degrees of freedom, incremental F values, and the probability of significance for these terms. So the usual process then, if we're doing a multivariate analysis, would be to check the data and the model by a series of univariate analyses of each trait. There's no point trying to fit a covariance involving a model term if there is in fact no variance associated with it. So we may have to modify our process if there is no sire variance, say, for one trait, and obviously we come to much more complicated models than what we have here. So determine an appropriate fixed effects model for each trait and check for outliers, problems with the data structure. And when we've sorted out an appropriate model for each trait individually and made sure that there is variance associated with each component of the random model, we can combine those univariate analyses to a multivariate analysis. Often we'll do that in bivariate analyses. Depending on the size of the data, we may go up to 10x10 matrices or maybe even larger. Now, as the number of traits increases, though, the difficulty of modelling increases. We talked a little bit before about the possibility that a sire variance component might be negative. It will be negative if the mean square for sires is less than the mean square for residual. Now, when we come to multivariate analysis, that same issue can apply, but it gets worse in that we now have a matrix of mean squares rather than a single mean square, and that matrix may have positive diagonal elements but may not be positive definite. The mean square matrix will be positive definite, but the variance components derived from it may not be. The covariances might be too big, giving a correlation greater than 1, for example. So it's common to do pairs of traits, and that could be done fairly automatically by setting up the job in such a way that we can control from the command line which pair of traits are being analysed if we're able to use a common model for them. The other thing that we might want to do is constrain the variance matrix that we're estimating, say the sire variance matrix, to be positive definite. And this is done by putting exclamation mark GP on the line after the US, which specifies what the variance structure is. Then, if the updated matrix is not positive definite, ASRM will back up and use an EM step rather than an AI step to update the matrix. EM will guarantee that if the first matrix is positive definite, then the updated matrix will also be positive definite. Now, that may be enough to give us a positive definite solution, or it may keep repeatedly giving us non-positive definite solutions. Then the EM algorithm is known to be very slow to converge, and so we would try some other approach, maybe a Kolesky factorization or a factor analytic model, maybe using a correlation model of some form, or the singular extended factor analytic, and there's also a general singular Kolesky formulation that's available as well. Well, what I suggest now is we go and get hold of the Coopworth data, which has got five traits in it, and the traits have various amounts of data. This is sheep data, fleece weight, fibre diameter, fat, depth, eye muscle depth, and unfortunately there's no pedigree depth on the dam side. The dams are not linked to the sires, but we can try some various analyses with this data, do univariate analyses of the traits, do some bivariate analyses, and you could proceed to doing a multivariate analysis on that data. So have a try at that and get a feel for setting up the variance structures and understanding how to fit multivariate models.